This is Ottawa at Work with Patricia Bull on News Talk 580 CFRA and the iHeartRadio Talk Network. That's 'cause I used
to be young. Good Thursday morning. A big, busy, newsy Thursday morning. Lots going on as you end your very short work week today. It's like everyone's trying to cram in their announcements here on a Thursday. We've got a good show coming up for you, a gorgeous Thursday as well. It is beautiful out there this morning, warming up quickly. Won't get quite as warm as we did yesterday, but we do have some nice temperatures on the way. We're at 6 degrees already right now, on our way to 9. Mostly sunny today. We have a mix of sun and cloud with a fair bit of sunshine in the mix over the next few days, right through your long weekend, right through until the Easter Monday. And then it all kind of falls apart again next week into early April. We have periods of rain or snow in the forecast for both Tuesday and Wednesday. Let's get to it.
Patricia's top three.
Patricia's top three before noon.
What they're developing, the intentional design of these products is very much to create habit formation that is a concern. Even our parents and guardians are expressing this concern, how it is that they help manage their own kids with social media.
We're uploading Ottawa Road 174, and that's going to be big. It's really, really big.
We are working on restoring the downtown, revitalizing the downtown and the Byward Market.
I really don't feel like paying this extra $400 a year or purchasing this tracker.
Story one.
A big breaking story from the Ottawa-Carleton District School Board this morning, taking a page from the book of many American school boards who have tried this with differing levels of success. The Ottawa-Carleton District School Board filing a $4.5 billion lawsuit, not on their own, but alongside several school boards in the Greater Toronto Area, all to tackle social media giants. They say they are doing this for the kids. Social media companies, including Meta and ByteDance, which owns TikTok, are being accused of disrupting students' fundamental right to education. OCDSB Director of Education Pino Buffone says the issue is twofold.
What we're talking about here is the intentional design of some software platforms that purposefully, much to your introductory comment, are purposefully created to encourage compulsive use. There's intermittent variable rewards, manipulation in essence, in these platforms that cause disruption to our education system, predominantly the learning and well-being or wellness of our students.
Buffone was on with Bill Carroll this morning, referring to comments Bill made as he was bringing him on, talking about his own kids and just watching them scroll TikTok on and on and on and thinking, come on, you got to get off of there. And then realizing you're doing it yourself. It's an issue for almost all of us, right? Social media. But who is to blame? And is there a responsibility that needs to be taken by those big social media companies that has not been embraced? Buffone says this stance is not anti-tech in the classroom, but is opposed to the ways these particular platforms are causing specific problems. He adds, these are problems the tech companies are absolutely and acutely aware of.
Some of these social media giants understand that what they're developing, the intentional design of these products is very much to create habit formation that is a concern. And it's a fallout in terms of learning. We've got attention issues, distraction in class, targeted challenges or competitions that cause harm or issues for the organization and for our student, staff, and school communities. And then cyberbullying and online peer pressure.
Mm-hmm. All of that, right? Issues that are a concern for a lot of parents. But you have experts in the States who have weighed in on this before and said they're not optimistic that these lawsuits can really create change. This is Dr. Aaron Sager at Fordham University. Says many products have adverse effects on children that create costs for schools. These costs include, but are not limited to, mental health problems for students. Without making any claims about relative magnitude, products that come immediately to mind include television shows, phones, sugary foods, sneakers, and music. All of these products arguably harm children, but also bring value, which includes enjoyment, to their users. So how do you make a determination on the impact? And how do you decide if there's someone to blame? Is this a David versus Goliath kind of issue with the Ottawa-Carleton District School Board jumping into the role of David on this one? Well, Buffoni says they're hearing on the ground from students and it's being tackled from a variety of other fronts, including other school boards.
Even our parents and guardians are expressing this concern, how it is that they help manage their own kids with social media. South of the border, a number of districts are also taking on lawsuits or litigation with social media giants to have them address something that they acknowledge they're doing in the manipulation of these platforms.
And in response to a question from Bill this morning, Buffoni says this is not the school board abdicating the responsibility to focus primarily on kids' education. He says 90% of kids in grades 7 to 12 use social media daily, and over half spend 5 hours a day or more on social media. And that's having a huge impact on time available and more, right? Their mindset, their focus, getting them to knuckle down and get to work. Every parent of a teenager out there has experienced this. But is it the parent's responsibility to do something about it? Is it the individual teacher's responsibility to do something about it? You can't ban phones from the classroom when they're using those as one of their main technological devices, can you? Or is it up to the school board to step in and protect our kids or try to protect them from further damage if that's what's occurring? We're going to explore all of this coming up later on the show. Buffoni says it's impacting other elements of the school board's education and work. It's increasingly difficult for them to manage that. Therefore, it needs to be addressed now so the board can focus on education more directly. He says there's minimal financial and time responsibilities. Bill was pushing him on this. How much does it cost for the school board to get into this? And that trustees are on board and voted in favor of the move.
Story two.
Well, this was happening as well this morning. A big announcement. The premier in town, as you know, he was in town because of Lisa McLeod and celebrating her last night in town to do breakfast with the mayor, and in town to make a big announcement as well. A $543 million deal, including a hotly anticipated announcement about Highway 174.
Subject to due diligence, we're uploading Ottawa Road 174, and that's going to be big. It's really, really big. And when we upload the roads, really the biggest issue on roads and highways is the maintenance. So we're providing $9 million in immediate funding.
Funding that frees up the capital, Ford says, to focus on some local priorities. The Ontario government says the new deal recognizes and invests in the city's unique needs as Canada's national capital and Eastern Ontario's economic growth. The mayor kind of reminding the premier in his remarks, hey, we're the second biggest city in the province. Pay us some attention. The agreement includes provincial support for the repair and upgrade of the city's major connecting routes and rural roads and opening a new Ottawa Police Service Neighborhood Operations Center in the Rideau Center. We know that's coming just a couple of streets over from where we sit right here in the market, the Neighborhood Operations Center. The Ontario government also announced funding to build a new interchange at Highway 416 and Barnesdale Road. We were telling you about that yesterday. The mayor says the downtown core will benefit significantly from the funding as there are a myriad of challenges being faced.
Our downtown core, as you know, has been dramatically impacted by a number of factors, including the reduced number of people who are going downtown to work every day. A lot fewer people are using our transit system as a result. There's been a significant increase in homelessness, in substance use disorder, in mental illness. We're working toward launching a new alternative response for mental health calls.
And Sutcliffe adds the city needs additional funding because there's so many new residents coming into Ottawa and into the downtown in particular.
We're working on restoring the downtown, revitalizing the downtown and the Byward Market. We need help in supporting a growing number of people who are arriving in Ottawa seeking asylum. That has changed so dramatically over the last couple of years.
The city and the province also calling on the federal government to provide federal support on shared priorities, including shelter supports for asylum claimants and infrastructure funding to support new housing. And when it comes to the downtown, This is an interesting one as well. The premier, in his speech, weighing in on the situation that is unique here in Ottawa, how much we have been impacted by the decision of the federal government to allow public servants to work a hybrid schedule going well past pandemic days. He is saying that it's time for the federal government to call their workers back. Would love to get your take on that this morning. Is there a role for the premier to play in making that comment? If he's providing funding to help revitalize the downtown core, does that make him an investor, as it were? Do you like the premier getting involved in that, or would you like him to steer clear? Would love to get your take on that a little later this morning.
This is New
Talk 580 CFRA. Welcome back. Our question for you this morning, with the Ottawa Public School Board joining three Toronto area school boards to launch a massive lawsuit against social media giants, Facebook, Instagram, Snapchat, TikTok. Do you think they're doing the right thing? Do you think this is a good move, that they're sticking up for our kids, for whom they say this has had a brutal effect, disrupting students' fundamental right to education? The lawsuit calling on the social media giants to remediate the enormous cost to the education system and redesign the apps to keep students safe. Do you like this from the school board, or do you think they're weighing into territory where they have no business being? Would love to get your take on this morning. 580. And we are going to get the take right now of a tech expert who joins us on a regular basis and is joining us on the line this morning, Carmi Levy, our tech journalist and analyst. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Patricia. Great to be with you.
Really appreciate you coming on. So this is not just here. This is the Ottawa Public School Board joining with three Toronto area school boards. This is something we have seen happen elsewhere in the States as well. Taking a stand, suggesting that our kids have really been adversely affected by the addictive nature of certain social media platforms. What are your thoughts initially on this lawsuit?
Well, I look at it initially through the lens of a parent. And as a parent, I'm glad to see this issue finally getting the attention that it deserves. We have seen a growing body of evidence, research, scientifically validated research that shows a strong correlation between social media and the algorithms and technologies that they use and the mental health impacts on their users, particularly impressionable, still developing young people. So the data is there, and the industry and society's stakeholders, like school boards, like governments, are finally starting to get with the program. And so in that context, this is a good thing. The last thing we want to do is bury it. The question then becomes, though, is this the school board's role? They already have scant resources to devote to delivering curriculum, to fulfilling our kids' educational needs. Do they have the resources to be pursuing this? And from a legal perspective, does it even stand a prayer of surviving the process and getting through to the other end? And I don't worry so much about that. In other words, it might very well crash and burn. And I think that's okay, because we're seeing other jurisdictions step in. We saw 33 states do much the same thing against Meta last October. We saw the city of New York launch a lawsuit that looks curiously like the one that the school boards announced this morning just last month, also against Meta, Snap, ByteDance, as well as YouTube. So there's a growing trend, and at some point, one of them is going to stick, or at some point, they'll all come together and they will all stick. And that, I think, so even if some of them don't, and even if some of them fail spectacularly, as part of that greater context, I think this is healthy. And I think society finally needs to start recognizing that social media and kids, not always the best combination. Mm-hmm. And we've got to do something about it. Whatever that something is, we can still argue about it, but something is better than nothing.
I would love to get that take from the listeners this morning, 580, as to whether it is the role of the school board. But I, as a parent as well, thought, yeah, like, stand up and say, this is having a negative impact on our kids. And if we, the adults in various roles in the community, in the village, are not kind of standing up to make sure they're okay, who is going to do that? So the more often some of these social media giants have to take the time to defend against some of these lawsuits, maybe at some point there's a message that's getting through. But I want to ask you about what the lawsuit is calling on the social media giants to do when it says redesign the apps to keep students safe. And we keep hearing there's an algorithm, they're designed to be addictive. Is the ask reasonable? Is there a way to redesign the apps to protect students? And is that a bigger step than just trying to enforce an age limit that is out there that is almost never actually enforced?
Well, they can certainly be redesigned. The question is, will they be as profitable afterwards as they are now? Because the way they're designed now, the algorithms that are used, so the software that tracks your usage, that tries to understand what makes you tick and then serves up content that keeps you on the platform as long as possible so they can maximize revenue, ad revenue off of you. That's a bottom line driven process without a whole lot of regard to the mental health impact of you watching video after video and doom scrolling for 3 hours when all you wanted to do was watch one. And so technically it can be done. Technically the algorithms can be dialed down to be more cognizant of mental health impacts, to be kinder and gentler, so to speak, but it will have a significant bottom line impact on the business. And in the absence of legal constraints against these big social companies, they've prioritized profitability over mental health time and again. And so I think lawsuits like this finally force the industry and broader society to have that discussion about, should profit prevail over the health of our kids?
Yeah.
And when those costs are pushed downstream, who should pay them? And the school boards are saying it's the tech companies that need to.
And I just want to ask you one more on that front, because I quoted an American expert earlier who was weighing in last year about some lawsuits that were happening in the States and said, you know, doesn't take issue with the lawsuit itself, but thought, you know, there wasn't much likelihood for success because there are so many other companies that are producing products that create issues and potentially mental health problems for our kids. And he mentioned stuff like music and sugary foods and TV shows and whatnot. But we do have protections that are in place often in those cases, or we do make efforts at least to take some of the sugary foods out of the cafeteria or out of the vending machines in the hallways. There has been a role for schools to play there. So if there is a role to play, is it the same or is it different because of the fact that this tech is designed in such a way that it is so pervasive and is so available and is so addictive and is so damaging?
I think it's absolutely critical that schools are part of this process because they are among those most affected by the impact of these technologies. In other words, they've got to deal with the fallout day to day. Your kid goes to school and is constantly being pulled in. How many kids are posting to social media or engaging on social media during school hours to the detriment of everything else they're supposed to be doing in school? How often does it pull them out of bed in the morning to the exclusion of everything else that they should be doing, or keeps them on at night? And then it's up to the teachers and the administrators to deal with the behaviors, the aggression, the violence in the classroom, because they simply can't maintain focus for longer than a certain period of time. So I think it's important that they're part of that conversation. Whether this one lawsuit actually succeeds in that almost doesn't matter. But at some point they need to be part of that, and they've stepped forward in this case boldly, I've got to say, to say, we're not going away, and we're going to keep discussing this because those costs are mounting, and someone has to be accountable for them. And I, as a parent, and my wife's a teacher, so she has dealt with this for much of her career, and it's gotten worse in recent years.
Yeah.
It is absolutely critical that we have these conversations, and I think this is a really good place to start.
And we could keep discussing this, you and I, for ages. We're going to continue the discussion with listeners right after the news. Carmi Levy, really appreciate your take on this. Getting lots of texts, 580, 580. The parents are just as bad, maybe worse. How do you address that? A lot of people weighing in on whether they think this is a role for the school board or not. We'll get into more of it coming up, but also a break from some hard-hitting news as well as we bring you some science stories with Dan Riskin. This is Ottawa at Work.
This is News Talk 580 CFRA.
We're PC Express. Of course we do online grocery delivery and pickup.
We're PC Express. Of course we save you time and money.
We're PC Express. Of course we'll give you $30 in points plus 3 months free delivery and pickup.
Get started at pcexpress.ca.
Listen anytime, anywhere, through your Apple CarPlay or Android Auto. Now, Ottawa at Work with Patricia Bull continues on News Talk 580 CFRA and the iHeartRadio Talk Network.
It is beautiful. It is sunny. It is 6 degrees out there, but it is not the weekend yet. No, it is definitely not. It is a busy Thursday. We've got news coming at us from all over this morning. A really, really interesting morning. Love you getting in on the conversation on all of these things as well. We've talked about a couple of them at length. The school board's decision to partner with three boards in Toronto to launch a lawsuit against social media giants, tackling them for their role in our kids being unable to learn properly in schools. But is it the role of the school board to do that? Do you like this move or not? A lot of people have very strong opinions this morning on that. Say it's a waste of taxpayer dollars. One person saying they can't even organize school buses. Why are they dealing with this? Would love to get your take. We're going to go through some of your texts coming up in just a little bit. We're also going to talk about the psychological angle of the social media impact on kids as well. Much more on this massive funding deal that the premier was in town to announce for the city of Ottawa. Did we get what we deserve on that front? The 174 being uploaded. We'll get into all of that. And this from the premier as well. We're going to talk to Graham about this coming up just after 11. But the premier calling for federal workers to return to the office, weighing in on what has been a big debate in this city. He's providing some funding, helping to revitalize the downtown area. Says, you know what we really need? Federal workers back downtown. And I know a lot of you civil servants out there have said, that's not our role. That's not our job to make sure the city is functioning well and that people are going to restaurants and whatnot downtown. But he says the federal government should be making that call, asking people to come back to work. He is asking the prime minister to do that himself. We'll get into that coming up as well. 580, 580. Would love your takes on all of those. But right now, we're going to talk a little science. We have Dan Riskin on the line for your fun science stories on a Thursday. And Dan, it's a big, exciting year for you, I think.
Yeah. Man, you opened a zillion cans of worms as you got to me there. And I just felt like, I'm just like one of your listeners where I'm like, I got to text in and say what I think about this. But I
was thinking exactly that. Dan probably has an opinion on that.
I do. And I can't hold back. But I just got to say this social media stuff, you know, whether it's a school board's job or not, I think that this communicates very clearly to parents what a lot of researchers have been screaming from the rooftops, which is that social media and kids are not mixing well. And it's really hurting kids. And if this does nothing more than to get that conversation on the dinner table and get people talking about it, then it's done what it needs to do. Whether they win the lawsuit or not, I just want parents to really start looking at what data are coming out, because it's terrifying what social media does to kids. And it's really, we talk about this crisis of mental health in young people, and there's just more and more data suggesting that it all has to do with how they feel about themselves when their social lives all happen through phones.
Amen to that. If there can be a conversation at the dinner table about anything at all, it would be a beautiful thing where there's eye contact and kids are putting their phones down and putting them aside.
Yeah.
And I love that. I mean, put it out there, let people talk about it. Force the social media giants to kind of defend what they've got going on. And maybe if there's enough hits from all over, maybe there's actually some change at some point. So we will see. It's really interesting to get everyone's take on this one today. But yeah, I know for you as a guy who's all about putting that phone down and getting out into nature and taking a walk and looking up and checking to see if there's bats in the trees above you.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's a big one for sure. And we're doing a lot of looking up this year, right? Okay, so we've got the solar eclipse that's coming up where you got to look up safely, make sure you have your glasses, you're only taking your glasses off, totality, all of that. We have something else going on in the sky as well. This Nova explosion, a new star in the Northern Crown. What's this about?
Yeah, this is really neat. The eclipse is a once in a lifetime thing for a lot of people, and this is another once in a lifetime thing for a lot of people. This is a nova, where a nova is Latin for new, and it's when a star that was not there before suddenly appears. And there are a lot of stars in the sky, so it might not seem that exciting, but they don't change every night, right? I mean, the satellites move around, and that's weird, but the stars, it's kind of this fixed thing that you can kind of rely on. Like the same constellations are there season after season. It's weird for a dot to appear where there wasn't one before, but there's this one dot that does that every 80 years or so, where it appears and then fades away over a couple days. And it last did this in 1946. It also did it in the 1800s. There are historical reports suggesting that this same one has been spotted in the 1700s and the 1200s. I mean, we're way back at Magna Carta now. This is a long time ago. But NASA says that there's been activity from this star system, which is found in a constellation called the Northern Crown or Corona Borealis. And they think it's going to light up this year. So right now there's just a dark spot to look at in the sky, which is hard to point at and get people excited about. But keep your eyes on your social media feed or wherever you get your astronomy information. Keep listening to our conversations because it's going to light up probably this year, says NASA. And so that's going to be really neat. It'll be visible for a couple days and then it'll probably fade. But when it's lit, it should be as bright as the North Star.
Love it. Got to turn my mic on here. When you say Corona Borealis, it immediately makes me think of Aurora Borealis and the Northern Lights. Just while we're talking about this, have you had a chance to have a really good look at the Northern Lights at some point?
Not in decades, but I grew up in Edmonton and I have some very fond memories growing up of just walking home across a school field and everybody just had to stop and we all lay down in the snow and just looked up and greens, yellows, and on a really good night, the purples. And this is the time of year where, or the time of the decade where there should be a lot of them because we're in a solar maximum right now. So there's a lot of solar activity, a lot of big outbursts. And so people are seeing lots of Northern Lights up north. I don't know if they've made it to Ottawa yet.
Yes, have you had Dan. Some? No, we have not, Dan. But yes, up north, it's beautiful. My daughter has been trolling me because on my trips up there, I have not had the opportunity to see the Northern Lights. Even though I've gone at the right time when it should be perfect, I have never seen them. I'm over 30 and I have never seen the Northern Lights. And she sends me the most beautiful pictures. Just happened to catch a glimpse of this when I was going to the gym last night or whatever. I'm like, stop it.
They are unbelievable. They really are spectacular. And part of the reason we don't see them is there might be nights where they would be visible, but we have so much light pollution, it's hard to see them. But listen, the silver lining, and I say that literally, is that during the eclipse, the corona, which is another use of the word corona, besides all the uses it's had in this conversation, the corona, which is the part of the sun, which is sort of like the wisps of stuff that come off the sides, which is normally invisible because the sun's so darn bright, it becomes visible during an eclipse. And the view of the corona that we should get during totality here in Ontario, far away from where everybody gets to see the Northern Lights, should be spectacular. And the fact that the total eclipse is happening during a solar maximum means it's going to be especially good. And even NASA scientists and astronomers are excited to get a good, careful look at it. They've got all kinds of instruments ready to point right at it.
Very, very cool. In the interest of continuing to use the word corona in whatever way we can, I just want to say it's 10:47, which means we're 5 hours and 13 minutes away from the Blue Jays' first game in Tampa this afternoon, opening day for Major League Baseball. Someone else is bugging me saying, I know it's not tennis, because I always talk about tennis, but yes, it is the first day for baseball as well. A couple other things we want to talk about while we have Dan on the line right here. Tick-killing pill shows promising results in human trials. So can we do more for our dogs to help them out with ticks than we can actually do for ourselves?
Yeah, right now that's exactly how it is. So right now the advice from medical experts is like, if you go for a hike, check yourself for ticks, make sure you have high socks and make sure you don't get ticks. And if you do get a tick, take it off. But the dogs, we just give them a pill once a month and then the ticks die if they try to feed on the dog. And it's like, well, could we do that? And so researchers in California, there's this startup called Tarsus Pharmaceuticals. They've got this quote-unquote new drug called Lotiliner, which is for humans, but it's not really actually a new drug. It's just a drug, it's a flea and tick medication for dogs that they've rebranded, and they're testing it on humans to see if it works. So it works for Fido, and so they gave it to some people, and they had some ticks crawl on those people's arms to see if it worked right away, and it does. And then they had ticks crawl on those people's arms a month later after they'd taken the pill, and it killed them then too. So 90% of the ticks died. And so this is possibly going to be something that we could do is in the summer months, as ticks become more and more of an issue, and as the diseases they spread become scarier and scarier through climate change, this might just be what we do to protect ourselves, because ticks have to attach to you. I mean, to give you Lyme disease, a tick has to be on you for about 24 hours. And so if you've got something in your blood system that kills ticks, that protects you against Lyme disease and other stuff that's spread by ticks. So this could be a step in the right direction, but early days. This is the first sort of test to make sure it works at all. And now we've got to check to make sure it doesn't have any side effects and things like that.
Yeah, it would be great, because I hate the fact that it's sort of made me second guess a little bit the last couple of years when you're hearing about bad tick seasons. So do I actually want to wander off the beaten path and into the woods at the cottage? And you want the answer to be yes, like get out there and explore. But you're a little stressed about, you know, what the possible ramifications could be. So hopefully there's some really positive stuff that comes out of that. I'm guessing, Dan, that you thought I was going to go from talking about baseball right into talking about soccer, right? That would have been more of the normal path.
No, you're the master of the segue. I am ready for whatever strange direction you want to take the conversation. You always, you're a master bus driver when it comes to topics. So I just follow your lead.
Like to keep you guessing. You're my favorite passenger. But I do want to talk a little bit about soccer or football, as we say, if we're in Liverpool or elsewhere in the UK. And there's a story out that suggests that AI might actually be useful in improving team success from corner kicks. How so? Yeah.
So AI is very powerful, but it likes to have a repeated problem that it can learn from and then apply what it learns. And so it's really good if you show it a whole bunch of pictures of dogs and cats, and then it has to guess if the next picture is a dog or a cat. AI is really good at stuff like that. But for like a fluid soccer game where people are in different places all the time, it's really hard for AI to sort of get its bearing and to figure out what it's learning from. So soccer coaches have been looking for ways that they could take AI's intelligence and get better soccer performance out of it. And one place where things are more controlled is a corner kick. Because for a corner kick, the coaches tell the players where to stand in specific locations. And those change a little bit depending on the coach, depending who they're playing against, depending who's on the field. And so Liverpool FC, which is a big club in the UK, took the data from 7,000 corner kicks and they gave them to Google DeepMind and said, learn from this and give us some ideas. And so Google DeepMind took that and they came back and said, okay, we've come up with this new AI system. We're going to call it Tactic AI, where right before a corner kick, it'll tell you how to, if you give it the, where the players are, it'll give you some adjustments that it suggests that they think will improve the likelihood that a shot on net will happen or that a shot on net won't happen if you're defending. And they haven't actually used these in games, or at least they don't admit that they have, because you only get about 5 corner kicks a game at that level of soccer. So they're too valuable, and they don't want to be throwing them away and letting a computer try and experiment when they need to win the game. So what they did instead is they showed these changes, these proposed changes to coaches, along with a whole bunch of other changes that the AI didn't suggest, to see if they stood apart. And they did. 95% of the time, the coaches thought these were good ideas and they would actually implement them. So this suggests that AI can offer some help to coaches with specific kinds of scenarios in which everybody's lined up. And I just can't help but think that when hockey players line up for a face-off, that is exactly analogous to a corner kick. And so I wonder whether the Senators or the Oilers or some other team is going to realize this and go to Google DeepMind and say, hey, we could use a little help with our face-offs. Do you want to give us some suggestions and see whether it can improve things there?
I mean, anything to give you an edge, I guess, but it seems to take away from the purity of the game on some level. I was watching the documentary about David Beckham and a little bit about his wife, and he was the master of the corner kick, right? He could place it exactly where he wanted. So many goals were scored off of that. And like, that's just an innate ability that he had that also came from years and years and years of practice and being drilled by his dad. But is it fair to then take AI and give others that same advantage? I don't know. Another discussion.
Yeah, it's a good question. But how do you, if the other team's doing it, then how do you, I mean, what do you do with it?
And,
you know, if the AI has been trained on a whole bunch of scenarios it's seen before, sometimes a surprise or a really creative trick play can work really nicely. Actually, Liverpool FC's most famous corner kick, and I forget who the player is and all this stuff, but basically when the corner kick was ready to start, everybody on the team acted as though they were getting ready for the player to do it, and they sort of walked away and acted like they weren't paying attention. And then the player did a really quick kick in and passed it to a player, and the guy scored. And that's when they do top plays of all time for Liverpool FC, that is like the number one play. So Liverpool FC especially loves corner kicks. And so I'm excited to see whether this takes off with them or if they decide this was neat, but they're going to just keep doing what they've been doing.
I love that. The kind of trick play that you see way more often in the other kind of football, which keeps you guessing. The strategy in that game is what I love about it. All right, Dan, thank you very much. Always a pleasure to chat with you and get your take on all kinds of things. And I hope you have a really wonderful long Easter weekend with your family.
You too. Thanks so much.
Dan Riskin, our CTV science and technology expert, is 10:54 on News Talk 580 CFRA. Just before we go to break here, we are going to give you an opportunity to head to the CTC. It is concert month at the CTC. There's a bunch of stuff happening in April, and on April 12th, you could be there in the exclusive 580 CFRA suite to see Queens of the Stone Age's The End Is Nero tour. Love that. CanadianTireCentre.ca if you want to buy yourself a pair of tickets, or you can give us a call right now, 613-521-TALK, 613-521-8255. We're going to give these away to caller number 20. Caller 20 today. I'm not going to see you at that one, but I might see if you're at Noah Kahn on April 9th. Lots of concerts happening. We'll be back in a moment. Your texts on the school board deciding to launch a lawsuit against social media. This is Ottawa at Work.
On the go, take News Talk 580 CFRA Ottawa with you. Download, listen, and learn through the iHeartRadio app. Now back to Ottawa at Work with Patricia Bull.
10:59 on News Talk 580 CFRA. There's lots going on in the news cycle today. The funding announcement from the province, which is big, how it impacts 174, which now gets uploaded again to provincial responsibility. Some other stuff in there. We're going to go through it with Tim Tierney coming up in just a little bit. But I'll tell you what you guys are texting about for the most part this morning is this decision of the Ottawa School Board, the biggest school board in our city, the public board, to partner with some boards in Toronto to go after social media giants. A lawsuit that was announced this morning. Is it their role? We're going to go through some of your texts coming up. But here's one take. What you're describing is called parenting. Parents don't have the nerve to hold their children accountable. So is it the responsibility of parents, teachers, to keep kids off social media? Does the board have a role to play? Do the companies who are creating the social media platforms that are so addictive have to take some responsibility in the way they have targeted children and youth who know nothing else now but an existence that is filtered by social media? We'll get into that. And also with Graham coming up after the 11 o'clock news, the premier today weighing in on an Ottawa issue. Should public servants be back at work full time? The premier says yes, and he'd like the prime minister to make that call. We'll get your take on that as well. This is Ottawa at Work.
People listening right now, the premier has said the unsaid that matters. He has basically said in a fairly polite way to encourage the federal government to get more public servants back into the office in a more robust way to help downtown. Justin Trudeau has absolutely no stomach for this, and I don't say that as a criticism. He just doesn't want to take this on with the unions, because the unions, quite rightly, to people who are listening and who have public servants in their families, this is an asset that they have essentially argued is essential, and it's a part of their agreements, mm-hmm. they say. So this would be a take back. So, but it's significant that the Premier of the province is saying to the Prime Minister publicly, please get them back to the office more than they are now to help the economy.
And here's what the premier said this morning. He said, I know a lot of people love working at home. True. And that's fine, he says, but we need the federal government to get government workers back into the office. Then he said, even a few days. Well, that's already happening. Okay.
It is already happening.
But this was met with applause this morning. The premier was at the mayor's breakfast, which was moved to the Shaw Center this morning. We're going to have all the detail on that coming up. Natalie Van Roy was there, and we'll have full story. And then he said specifically that he's going to, he didn't say he's going to ask the prime minister, but he said, hopefully the prime minister will call people back to work. So right. He's putting it right on Justin Trudeau saying, You got to make this happen. And without the people down there, the economy starts dying, the restaurants start hurting, everything else starts hurting. This is a conversation that we were having when they were trying to figure out what they were doing and would the hybrid happen and stick. And then people are texting in saying, we hate that you're putting this on us. Like, yeah. We're public servants. It's working for us. We're able to do our job. If we have the hybrid or we're working from home, it's not our responsibility to make sure a restaurant on York Street or in Sopa, right near Parliament Hill,
is doing
in
better.
Business. That's not on us.
Fair enough. Fair point. It's also the counterpoint to that is that this all started for a safety issue that no longer exists. And so look, I don't think Justin Trudeau is going to do this, but I do think it sets the stage if the government changes federally that perhaps Pierre Poilievre might. And from my perspective, it would be an easy change. Like, new governments are always about change, right? We're going to do something different than the old government did. And this would be top of the list, even though it might be unpopular in his own riding for a lot of people. You know, again, this was a safety issue, and the safety issue no longer exists. So I fully understand, with public servants in my family, how sort of electric this argument can be, and how many, many of them are suggesting that it is ridiculous that we would have to go back to pods and do Teams calls on pods in pods when we can do them at home. That's a fair point that the union is also making as well. But if this is going to go any further, I just think this is a signal that it could go further, because clearly at the mayor's breakfast, the premier doesn't say that without the mayor being involved, right? This is clearly what Sutcliffe would like to see happen as well. Many members of city council texting me saying, finally, someone is saying it other than us. So there you have it.
If there are any public servants out there who are listening,
they're
right
working.
Now. They're working.
They've
I know.
Got you on in the background.
580-580. Would love to get your take, because it has been fairly quiet from the public servants so far this morning on this. And I'm thinking maybe that's just because they think the premier can say whatever he wants.
And
he
maybe
has
maybe they just don't want to get into it. They don't want to get into
They're done. They're done with this debate.
And this debate has been had, and they know that systems-wise, this will take a lot of work to get done, perhaps even inside a collective agreement. Although the previous Treasury Board president, Mona Forche, was adamant with me that this is not
outside the agreement.
This is outside the agreement, and this is management's call. I have to check up on that. I think she's obviously she knows her file, or she did. She is correct on that. I don't know how many contracts have had work from home or hybrid actually written in. But essentially, you know, Ford is suggesting that hybrid as a full-time thing is not good for the economy.
Someone texting and saying, everyone should be made to go back to work. Never mind asking the worst prime minister ever. Okay. And then someone else, maybe Poilievre would sell more buildings to save money. Common sense.
Maybe. But the thing with the selling buildings, Patricia, too, like, Trudeau wants to talk about housing. Like, if we've got empty office buildings, let's convert them to housing and affordable housing. That's a great idea, but I'll see you in 15 years. That's not a 6-month solution. That's a retrofit the building, gut it. That's, you know, put out the contracts, on and on it goes. That won't happen for many, many years.
And we also have people who are texting in about the whole social media thing on this one particular aspect. So someone says, good morning. Missing a big piece of the story. No surprise. A little shot at me here.
No, that's
the
not very nice.
The school board is filing due to their abject failure as educators is costing how much? The state once again stepping in, where it's 100% on parents and guardians. So Bill Carroll this morning had the director of education on for the OCDSB, and he said, how much is this costing? And Phil said, not very much.
Nominal cost.
At least right now. Nominal cost. Why would it cost that much? Just because lawyers are expensive? I don't know what the cost would be. I think it would be fairly insignificant when spread out over the number of
boards
and
parents. Yeah. I mean, I think Bill's point as well, as my reading of it, was, aren't there other things to be focused on as opposed to suing media giants? Because I thought it was supposed to be about educating children. And anyway, he's going to be on with us as well at 6:00.
Yeah. Yeah. I find it interesting.
Yes.
At least it's creating a discussion, right? Everyone having a chance to give their take and weigh in on social media once again and acknowledge the fact that I think it is having a devastating impact on our kids. Are you listening to me? Are you scrolling TikTok right now, Grant?
Just checking. It has fundamentally changed everything. Absolutely.
Just before we let you go.
And I'm always listening to you.
We want to leave the last word with the Premier this morning. This was Premier Doug Ford earlier today on public servants.
They have to get people back to work. You know, I understand maybe, you know, even like 3 days, anything. It sounds crazy. I'm begging people to go to work for 3 days. Not that they aren't working at home, but it really affects the downtown. And I'll pass this over to the mayor to talk about. But we need them to bring people back to work, to go into the restaurants, go into the shops downtown, get on transit. And that's what we need.
The public servants are saying, hey, we're going 3 days a week, Tuesday to Thursday.
He might have been misinformed. Right?
Or he's talking about other departments.
Maybe.
Or he's just making a general comment, response to a question. Interesting stuff. Would love to get your take on this. 1117 on News Talk 580 CFRA. When we come back, more on the impact of social media on our kids in the classroom. We're going to talk to someone who is in favor of a complete cell phone ban in the classroom. This is Ottawa at Work.
This is News Talk 580 CFRA. Welcome back to Ottawa at Work with Patricia Bull on News Talk 580 CFRA and the iHeartRadio Talk Network.
What we're talking about here is the intentional design of some software platforms that purposefully, much to your introductory comment, are purposefully created to encourage compulsive use. There's intermittent variable rewards, manipulation in essence in these platforms that cause disruption to our education system, predominantly the learning and well-being or wellness of our students.
That is Pino Buffone, the OCDSB Director of Education. He was on CFRA earlier this morning talking about the lawsuit the Ottawa Public School Board has launched along with three Toronto area school boards against social media giants, the lawsuit calling on them to remediate the enormous cost to the education system and redesign the apps to keep students safe. It's a really, really interesting discussion. A lot of you are weighing in on this morning. We want to bring in Sachin Maharaj, Assistant Professor in Educational Leadership, Policy, and Program Evaluation right here at the University of Ottawa. Good morning to you.
Good morning.
What was your initial reaction to this lawsuit?
Well, it's interesting because different jurisdictions in Canada have recently been trying to take different approaches to addressing some of the issues with phone and social media use. So the Toronto District School Board has recently announced plans to impose greater restrictions on phone use, possibly banning them in schools. We've seen the province of Quebec announce a ban on phones in schools this year, and British Columbia is planning to do so in September. But now you have school boards coming together to actually address sort of the root of the problem, and that is the nature of these social media apps and the way they're designed. And so they're placing some onus and accountability on the companies designing these apps to address the issues that they're causing on the academic and social and emotional well-being of students. So I see it as kind of a part of a multi-pronged approach to address these issues. It comes on the heels of several dozen American states suing the parent company of Facebook and Instagram for these same reasons, because of the impact it's having on kids' mental health. And the thing to note is that the companies themselves know this. They conduct their own internal research and know that this is negatively impacting a good proportion of kids, yet are failing to take measures to address these issues, because what would happen is it would decrease how addictive these apps are, and, you know, would put some of their profits in danger. And so this is, I think, a way for people to try to impose greater accountability on these companies.
The evidence, according to any expert I've spoken to, is overwhelming that kind of social media addiction, that the time kids are spending on those platforms, is having a negative impact on them. There doesn't seem to be much of a debate around that, but then I guess the debate moves through to what is the best way to get at that, to maybe somehow protect our kids going forward. In your mind, is a cell phone ban in classrooms the most effective way to keep the cell phone and what's on it from interfering with their ability to learn and get an excellent education?
Well, that's at least one step that I think schools and school systems can take, is that at least during the school day, you know, when kids are supposed to be, you know, focusing on learning and socializing with their peers, that they're actually doing that. And anything that takes away from that, that we have some sort of restrictions. And so there was a study done last year by the Children's Hospital at the University of Michigan that tracked kids' phone use over the course of a couple of weeks. And what they found is that virtually 100% of kids are using their phones during school hours. And when they looked at what specifically they're doing on their phones, the vast majority of it is social media use, followed by YouTube and gaming. And in terms of being used for educational purposes, it was found to be used less than 2% of the time. So having restrictions during the school day is, I think, you know, one step in that direction. But I think what this lawsuit is trying to do as well is, you know, when kids aren't, even if they're not on their phones during school, they're going to be on their phones after school. And some of these same dynamics are still at play. The OECD actually looked at some data at schools that restrict phone use during the day. And what they found is that there's some reason to believe that in those situations, kids might be actually increasing their phone use outside of school hours, almost to like make up for what they missed or what they feel they missed during the day. And so I think, you know, the root cause of this is the way that these social media apps are designed in the first place. And so I think having some regulation to try to change some of that is what the goal of this lawsuit is.
I think about this all the time, even beyond the social media. I just think, you know, I text my kids during the day when they're at school and think, like, you know, answer me, and expect them to answer me at lunch, but they'll answer me during. But I assume that we're going to have that connection. I can't imagine when I was a teenager having my parents call me up or in some way try to get my attention while I was at school. Like, there's so many things that are coming into play and coming at them all the time. But it seems to be one of the main comments that I'm getting on the text board, and I only have 30 seconds left for you on this, that it is the responsibility of the parents to be setting the example, to be creating the limits, to be teaching our kids how to deal with social media, not the responsibility of educators or the school board. What would you say to that argument?
I would say that we have a collective responsibility, both as educators and parents within the community, to address these issues. I mean, part of the problem is that we've kind of individualized this issue, that it's up, you know, to individual kids to exercise their own willpower or individual parents to address this with their kids. But the problem is, you know, you're up against some of the biggest companies in the world employing some of the best and brightest minds to make these things as addictive as possible for everybody, right? Not just kids, but also adults as well. And so in order to address some of these effects, I think educators have to work together with parents and others in our communities to figure out what approaches are going to work best.
Mm. It's such an interesting question. Do we have to just stand by while these companies are profiting at the expense of the mental health of our kids if we know what's happening? And it's a discussion that will continue beyond today, but I really appreciate your take on this, Sachin. Thank you so much for coming on.
You're welcome.
Sachin Maharaj, Assistant Professor in Educational Leadership Policy and Program Evaluation at the University of Ottawa. It's 11:31. Quick break for the news. On the other side, we're going to talk to Councillor Tim Tierney about this massive funding announcement from the Premier today.
Join the conversation on Ottawa at Work with Patricia Bull. Text 580-580 right now.
Subject to due diligence, we're uploading Ottawa Road 174, and that's going to be big. It's really, really big. And when we upload the roads, really the biggest issue on roads and highways is the maintenance. So we're providing $9 million in immediate funding.
That is the voice of Premier Doug Ford this morning as Ontario announces a $543 million funding deal for the city of Ottawa, including, as you heard there, taking over Highway 174. It has been a busy morning, a lot going on. That is just one of the highlights coming out of the Premier's visit this morning. We want to break it down a little bit in terms of what this all means for Ottawa. With an East End councillor, Beacon Hill Civil Ward councillor Tim Tierney, also the chair of the Transportation Committee, joining us now. Good morning to you, Tim.
Good morning, Patricia. Thanks for having me on today.
I appreciate you coming on. So first of all, what does that mean for any of us? I guess it's good news for you guys at the city that you're able to upload the road and some of the maintenance back to the province, something that I recall Stephen Blay talking about a decade ago that he wanted to see happen. Is it all good?
Oh, absolutely. It's all good. Even previous councillors to Councillor Blay and I, when we got in 2010, we've always thought this is a provincial highway. This is a, it's not a local municipal road, and we're really proud and happy of the announcement today. It was, let's call it for what it is, it was a transportation budget, and as transportation chair, between the 174 upload that costs us just in maintenance alone, it's $3 million a year. You look at the Barnsdale Road interchange in the south end, and of course, March Road with the BRT. This is great news from a transportation perspective, and I'm very happy with today's announcement.
Okay, so a transportation budget, it's interesting. So if this frees up some money for the city, then I guess that's good news for all of us. Does this change anything for anyone who drives on the 174 every day? Are they going to notice any difference, whether the city or the province is kind of in charge?
Well, first of all, you're going to notice that it's not going to be called the 174 anymore. At some point, the decision will have to be made to call it what it is, a 400 series highway. I can't wait to find out the number. You'll be first to know, Patricia.
Is there a 418 out there already? 18 is my favorite number.
If it's 18, I'll push for it. I'll talk to you.
417, 418. I think it just flows.
There you go. It works perfect. So that would be one minor item, obviously. But of course, signage, things related to snow plowing, for example. You see it's municipal plows doing our segment of the 174. Possibly is going to be obviously the provincial plows. You also see, we have to talk about policing. It's city police on that segment of the 174. Will that be OPP? So there's still some T's to cross and I's to dot, but certainly this is good news because you're quite correct. This will free up money for other initiatives within the city. This is, I don't want to sugarcoat it. This is a pretty big deal.
Okay. So a big deal, and it'll be treated probably essentially the way we see the 417 treated in Ottawa. We'll look for more detail on that coming up. But when you say this is a transit kind of announcement, I mean, does it go as far as you would like it to in terms of transit? We know that the province has been fairly generous when it comes to public transit in the Toronto area. Are we still left with a real funding gap when it comes to public transit here in Ottawa, OC Transpo, LRT, where there's been a struggle with ridership? Would you have liked the province to come through in a bigger way in that department?
Certainly, you know, you never say no to money, but at this point, we were quite happy with what was on the table today. And that question did come up during media scrums. And of course, we're going to continue to work collectively together. And, you know, I'm the barnacle around the table, Patricia. I've been there for 14 years. And when a provincial government comes with a bag of money, you don't balk at it. You appreciate the day, and we'll get to those finer details later on. But it is truly a good day because there's a lot of other areas in our city that we need transportation connections, roads. Like, yes, cars aren't disappearing, folks. Even e-cars are around, so we have to make sure we focus on getting better roads in certain areas. I have Blair Road in one area that needs to be widened. There's a few projects we'd love to do. We've never had the money. Now we have that opportunity.
The interchange, of course, that we were talking about yesterday, that's going to affect people in the other end of the city in Barrhaven who are needing another way to get on the 416 because they're bogged down in traffic trying to get to either the Manotick entrance or the one at Fallowfield. And there's a big distance between the two of them, of course. Tim, you were at the breakfast this morning, were you?
I was up bright and early, and it was great, great announcement. Obviously, Lisa McLeod, congratulations, and Jan Harder, former Councillor Harder, worked extremely hard on that as well. And obviously, our new councillors, David Hill and Wilson Lowe, are very happy about this. It affects the entire south part of the city. So this is a big, big deal, and again, kudos to everyone chipping in. And It's such a sizable basket this round. It's hard to dissect it all at once. We've, you know, when we heard about it, we've been, okay, what's the details? Now we're all crawling around for it, and there's going to be more detail coming out over the next couple of days, but we're quite happy about Barnsdale.
Yeah, and that's where I feel like I'd like a little bit more detail on this, because when you look in the written word and hear that the premier is talking about public servants in Ottawa, and then you hear him, he sounded a little bit more casual as he broached this. I'm going to play this again for the listeners, and then I'd like your take on these comments from Premier Doug Ford this morning.
They have to get people back to work. You know, I understand maybe, you know, even like 3 days, anything. It sounds crazy. I'm begging people to go to work for 3 days. Not that they aren't working at home, but it really affects the downtown. And I'll pass this over to the mayor to talk about. But we need them to bring people back to work, to go into the restaurants, go into the shops downtown, get on transit. And that's what we need.
The reaction I'm getting on the text board, we're already going in a couple of days a week. 5 days is unrealistic. It's not up to us to rejuvenate the core. Was this sort of a planned comment from the premier, do you think, the weighing in on this? And do you like what he had to say about, hey, it's time to get everyone back to work? The downtown needs workers.
Yeah, it was a very interesting comment, especially in light of the fact that the Prime Minister also came out with something essentially saying we need people back more than 2 days a week. It should be a few days a week. And so I think there is that sentiment of getting it's not just about downtown, just government workers in general, which I love and support. But there certainly was that echoed there. There was also a big component about law and order. And which I'm quite satisfied with. Obviously, looking at the downtown police station, there's going to be some money going towards that. A little more boots on the ground in the market, so people actually feel safe. You work in the market, you know it. It's always interesting at times, and that's, you know, it's twofold. Yes, certainly there has to be resources and help that goes along with it, but then there's just general antics that take place where you want to see some boots on the ground that may deter from those kind of things taking place.
And that's where it felt to me like he was saying, hey, if our government is going to invest in this, is going to help you guys out with getting your downtown core back kind of in order and rejuvenated, then I think I have a say on the fact that you all need to collectively as a population in Ottawa maybe be a part of that. And getting people back to work would be one of the ways for sure to really kickstart the, and people are working. I say back to work in the office is what I mean. Obviously.
Yes, yeah. Absolutely. And, you know, local business obviously uses that and pays taxes, and, you know, nobody wants to see papered over windows in stores or restaurants. So, you know, we are a government city. We are unique to the entire country. So this is one of the deals that we have to face right now.
Tim, thank you very much for coming on this morning. We'll talk to you again soon, I'm sure, as more detail emerges about some of what is in this agreement as everyone's poring over it. But I appreciate your take this morning.
Thank you very much, Patricia.
Tim Tierney is a councillor for Beacon Hill Sirville Ward, also the Transportation Committee Chair. It's 11:46 on News Talk 580 CFRA. Just before we go to break, get you up to speed on the weather forecast. We want to give you a chance to win a 4-pack of tickets to see the Sens taking on the Florida Panthers. The Sens coming off another huge win last night. 5 goals in the first period. That's the first time they've had 5 goals in a period all season long. So maybe they're just going to win them all out down the stretch here. Not many games left, though. This is your opportunity. If you can't buy your tickets at Ticketmaster.ca, then why not win them right here? 521-TALK, 521-8255. We'll give these to caller number 16 today. Caller 16, your text when we come back. Good luck.
This is News Talk 580 CFRA.